Hello again, welcome to another episode of the NESG Radio Podcast. And today is the International Youth Day 2025. Happy International Youth Day. Today we'll be looking at the topic, Youth Empowerment for a Sustainable Future. How young Nigerians are shaping a sustainable future. The International Youth Day, celebrated every year on the 12th of August, provides an annual opportunity to recognize the potential, innovation and leadership of young people in shaping a better future. The 2025 theme, Youth Empowerment for a Sustainable Future, calls attention to the role of youth in achieving the sustainable development goals from climate action and inclusive governance to digital innovation and economic equity. With a growing youth population, Nigeria stands at a critical junction. Young people are not only the most affected by environmental degradation, economic uncertainties, and social instabilities, they are also the most equipped to lead change. Across the country, youth are launching climate movements, building civic tech tools, creating green enterprises, and advocating for inclusive policies. On today's episode, I have top leaders from the community of practice of youth at the NESG who would explore questions around what true youth empowerment looks like in Nigeria today. How young people are advancing sustainability across sectors, what systems and policy shifts are needed to accelerate youth-driven impact. And on our resource list today, first is our facilitator, Hassana Bello Aliyu, who is the Vice President of Operations at Kanesa, a pioneering integrated utility company that accelerates access to reliable power for all by leveraging cost efficiency and disruptive technologies. At Kanesa, Hassana leads on regulations, compliance, and government relations, as well as technical and business development. Her work has included development of on-grid and embedded renewable generation, distribution, franchising, and energy trading. She works as a project manager for Nigeria Solar Capital Partners, an affiliate company developing a utility-scale solar PV plant in Bauchi State. She's previously worked in construction management on large-scale rail development projects with London Underground and Network Rail, including CTRL, St. Pancras Redevelopment, World Lane Station, the first new London Tube Station on an existing line for 70 years, and the Thames Link Program Farringdon Station Redevelopment. She is a Nigerian Economic Summit Group Bridge Fellow, and during her fellowship year, she formed part of a team that developed the Nigeria's medium term national development plan for 2021 to 2025. Upon her completion, she subsequently worked as part of the team that developed and designed the mandate structure thematic focus area for the community of practice on youth, and today she serves as a facilitator. You're welcome, Hassana.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Next on our list is Eben, who we've featured on different episodes of the NESG podcast. He is a change maker with over 15 years of experience working with more than 40 organizations. He's a founder of Policy Shapers, convener of the Rivers 2050 Vision, a 25-year development blueprint for River State, and the thematic lead for policy, politics and governance with the NESG Community of Practice on Youth. He previously worked at change.org and led the Reform IELTS campaign, which mobilized over 83,000 supporters and influenced English language policy reforms in 32 universities worldwide. Eben is a member of the World Economic Forum's Expert Network, a Mandela Washington Fellow, School Fellow, NESG Fellow, Civic High Fellow, and winner of the first Sound City MVP Award for Community Development. He's an alumnus of the Harvard Kennedy School and the London School of Journalism. You're welcome, Eben.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Stephen.
And our last but in no way the least resource person we have today is David Omata. He's a climate and energy policy professional with over 7 years of experience leading projects and research. His works has contributed to the design and implementation of innovative policy models with recognized impact on SDGs implementation. He currently serves as the thematic lead for environmental sustainability and climate change at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group Community of Practice on Youth. He's also a senior research associate with NESTIA and the 2025 Alexander von Humboldt Climate Protection Fellowship hosted at the African Policy Research Institute in Germany. He holds a BSc in Biological Sciences from the Kogi State University, a postgraduate diploma in education from City College, and an M.Eng. in Environmental Science and Sustainable Development from the UNEP Institute at Tongji University, China, and an MPhil in Renewable and Sustainable Energy Technology from Kenast, Ghana. Welcome to the podcast, David.
Thank you, Dr. Progress.
All right, let's jump right into the conversation. And I will begin with a general question for the three of you. I will begin from a personal experience point of view. What personal experience or turning point inspired each of you to begin this your journey as a youth leader in your different fields? Let me start with Eben.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that there's so many of them that I've come across the years, but I feel one that stands out for me was when I was 19 years old, in 2011, I had taken JAMP a couple of years before, and I noticed that there was this like widespread, at my own center, there was widespread examination malpractice. And, you know, being naive, I was just like, why did we all, you know, study for so many years, you know, come out and people are cheating, you know? So I left the exam hall that day really like angry, you know, because I think it was just a few people who didn't cheat and they moved us to one other hall or something like that. Anyway, long story short, I was really angry about that. And I started this campaign on Facebook called Read Not Runs, hashtag Read Not Runs. If anyone checks the hashtag, it goes back to like 2011, 2010, where I was speaking about examination malpractice and sort of things that we need to do to sort of like address it. And yeah, I think we had like close to 500 young people then on Facebook across the country sign up to the pledge, you know, against examination malpractice and stuff like that. And yeah, it was small scale at the time compared to all the things I've done after that. But yeah, I think that was one of the times that I started to feel that, you know, that fire of wanting to do something and change something for the first time.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. Quite insightful. Hassana, how about you?
I think I would say maybe earlier on when I first moved back to Nigeria, and I started working, and part of my responsibilities was having to recruit new staff. So interviewing a lot of recently graduated candidates, and seeing how what was on their CV did not at all translate into reality, and thinking how sad and terrible it was that we are literally graduating people who cannot successfully go through an interview, could hardly articulate any ideas, could not speak to what they wanted for their futures, and just going through this process and trying to just find one person who met up to a standard was so hard. At that point, I just started thinking, what in Nigeria are we doing? We are literally building a future on quicksand. So I think from that point, I became more interested in ensuring that, look, we have our foundation and we're not putting everything that we need to put to make sure that we build a nation that can stand.
Thank you very much for sharing, Hassana. David, how about your experience?
Yeah, what inspired me to go into the field of environment as a sustainability was from the university. My HOD then had a problem with the vice chancellor because the man felt threats that we were on campus, and the HOD was really angry about it, like why the world is fighting climate change. And we had the VC who was interested in cutting down the trees rather than planting more trees. So it piqued my interest, and I started following up then on the Millennium Development Goals. And I started following the global shift from the Millennium Development Goals into the Sustainable Development Goals. So I think that was a wake-up call for me. And when I got to the NYC, I decided to enroll for the Development Knowledge Facilitators for the Sustainable Development Goals. I think I was among the first set that was trained in the transition from the Millennium Development Goals into the Sustainable Development Goals. And that was how I started with the personal development projects, majored mainly on the Goal 13. So I served in College of Education in Delta State. So I was able to put projects together, brought the key stakeholders from the school to even let them know how climate change was affecting the campus and the town itself. So from there, I launched in, started doing the campaigns and building personal profile to make more impact in the field. So that is what led me here.
It's quite interesting that across the three different experiences you've all shared, that youth empowerment was very, very focal and a shifting point to your journey in this sector. Let me now ask you, Asana, what does youth empowerment mean in practical terms today, especially within the COP?
I think youth empowerment, it's going beyond tokenism and treating youth as a beneficiary of policies. We need to shift that mindset to engaging with youth as co-creators, as leaders of change, and as leaders of the future. And that involves capacity building, like practical empowerment equips youth with skills, with knowledge, with networks, with platforms to take the initiative themselves, to be able to go out, represent, influence, advocate, and build a nation today that works for them in the future. It's like if you're running a relay race and you expect the youth of today to be the ones who run the last leg of the race, and yet you're not including them in any of the strategy meetings, you're not training them, you're not giving them the right equipment, and then one day you just give them the baton and say, hey, run this race and win it. It doesn't work that way. The young people of today are the leaders of tomorrow, and therefore we need to engage with them as such. They need to be part of the creations, the strategies, the agendas. So when it comes time for them to pick up the baton, they are ready. And they already know the direction that they're going.
Quite interesting that you speak about the issue of going beyond tokenism. Let me come to you, Eben. How can we ensure youth participation in governance doesn't just become tokenism, as Asana mentioned, or just optics?
Yeah, I mean, just ensuring that youth actually are, you know, the thoughts, the ideas of young people are actually being transmitted to policy, not just being listened to, or, you know, being given sort of like, just so that it looks good, we just have a young person on this committee or on this thing, and let's just look like we're youth friendly. But, you know, the voices and the thoughts of the youth are not being part of policy, whether it's at the subnational or the national level. So I think that's one practical way to ensure that it's not tokenism. And I feel like it's an amazing idea that we have the National Youth Confab currently being planned. And when that happens, youth ideas will be put together in a policy document that will be transmitted to the federal government. But I think beyond having a one-off confab, we need to make youth engagement in public policy a lifestyle. Like, it needs to be part of the process, whether it's in the budget, whether it's in a new policy. Everything that happens within the policy space, the most affected stakeholders are the young people, because it influences their future and influences their lives, right? So I think that it needs to be part of the process, you know. So there needs to be a consultation with young people right from the beginning, not as an afterthought, but at the beginning and at the start of every policy development process. Yeah.
Interesting that you speak about policy. David, in your view, what is the most underestimated climate action that Nigerian youth can lead and scale up very quickly as we talk about policy issues?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Progress. So I would start from the point of research. So I think research is one key aspect in the whole fight against climate change that is very promising to the young people in Nigeria, and we have so much looked down on it. If you look at the whole countries that are doing well in terms of tackling climate change and promoting environmental sustainability, driving renewable energy actions, you see that they have invested a lot in the areas of research. So every policy now that we to design or we want to review, we should look into the aspect of research. We have a lot of young people in Nigeria every year we are having a form of a brain drain where we have young people that are taking through different scholarships outside of Nigeria, and I am one of them. I am not presently in Nigeria. Other countries provide this kind of research funding where people can actually do research on the key issues that are affecting their country, and this then translates into policy. Policies are not just made, they are the outcomes of research that are being conducted or have been conducted, and then they now happen to shape the future of that nation in terms of, like, my field now, which is climate change, or in terms of the sustainability. Another promising side that I would talk about would be the renewable energy access. We have a lot of young innovators in Nigeria that are doing quite well in terms of this. We have startups that are doing well here. So it's another area that I think the youths or policies should policies first should be designed to promote the youth actions in this field, maybe providing more funds like the green funds to promote renewable energy access and other things like, let's say, climate smart agriculture, where youths can actually go into. This field, the country is doing quite well, but I think we really need to do more beyond policy now, the implementation, to see the real action in meeting all our climate targets.
Let me stay with you, David, for a moment. How do we move youth climate activism? Because I see a lot of activism around climate issue at the moment. But how do we move this youth climate activism from protest to policy? What is the bridge, and who should build this bridge?
Thank you for that question, Dr. Progress. Now, we have to move from activism to action. Now, activists come from the civil societies, and the whole essence is at times to make the government to become more aware of the challenges around us. So if we are going to move from activism to action, there is something in between, and that would be understanding the core principles of what we are even advocating for. On one hand, we have a lot of youths that are doing the whole activism, and this will still come down to the first point I mentioned, which is research. So we have people who are doing the whole advocacy and doing the campaign now, but understanding the details, the science, the technology behind what we are advocating for is where there is a gap. And if we are able to understand this very well, we are going to move from just advocacy, from activism, right, to understanding the technical problems and preferring the real solutions that will now be handed over or proposed to the government, and the government will then take actions on what needs to be done. So one hand is the youth, in between is the knowledge that needs to really be formed, moving from climate into the, from advocacy into the science, understanding this, and then government now coming in to take actions on the whole things that have moved from the advocacy into the science, the technical side, and we will be able to take a real and a practical steps towards combating the impact of the climate change and meeting our nationally determined contributions.
Thank you very much, David, for building that bridge for us. Let me come back to Asana. Asana, you used the analogy of passing the baton from, you know, older generations to younger people. I would love to ask you, what does meaningful intergenerational collaboration look like, and how can youth platforms position themselves to demand this?
Thank you, Stephen. I think platforms like the NESG Community of Practice on Youth is primarily connecting individual interest and passion with purpose, and acts as a conduit between these individual, their expertise and their interests, and a structured national development agenda, bringing together young leaders from diverse sectors, whether it's climate, whether it's digital economy, political governance, and giving them this platform where their voices are amplified, and connecting them with the policymakers and the development partners who are currently able to translate these ideas, these expertise into meaningful agendas for national development, providing them with the ability to advocate and to influence based on their expertise based on their perspective and based on their desire for the future of Nigeria. So through this collective advocacy, not only are we within the community learning from each other, sharing ideas, increasing knowledge and expertise, but also providing a platform to advocate for not just youth inclusion, but also youth ideas. I mean, I think it's key to think about the fact that how quickly the world has changed from, say, even just the 90s to today. And then you think about the fact that you have people in power who were born in the 50s, in the 60s. They cannot fully or at all think about the world, about creating in a way that the youth of today can, because it's a completely different world, completely different avenues, tools that are available in a way that have never been available before. So it's so important to have the youth of today bringing their understanding of this world into creating the world of the future, and not people who were born in a time where it was a completely different way of life. So I think it's in the community, we are bringing these, we are building these platforms where youth are able to meet policymakers, contribute meaningfully, advocate, and collaborate.
I do agree with you that yes, indeed, the young people of today, they have, you know, very unique perspective at looking at issues. Even we ourselves as young people, the Gen Zs, have a different ways of looking at issues than we ourselves that are also part of the group of millennials. Let me come to Eben. Many people, just as we've spoken about ideas, many young people are doing great work, but remain invisible to systems that could amplify this impact that they are making. What do you think needs to change to bridge this visibility and support gap?
I think as Hassana said very, very brilliantly, I think the platforms that we're creating within COP Youths, and even like the need for more platforms to be created to ensure that policymakers, you know, the institutions that should know about the youth initiatives and the young people, you know, should actually be made. I think that, for example, what we're doing at the COP Youth, I think this through the NESG's youth town hall, we're ensuring that young people can engage with various kinds of leaders across several sectors. We've had people in climate, we've had people in governance, you know, from parliament and stuff like that. And I think those spaces sort of encourage that kind of like, you know, direct engagement, because, you know, like most of our policymakers have most times a ton of, you know, aides around them most times. That makes it difficult for a regular young person, for example, to be able to walk into the office and speak to them. But I think through these kind of platforms, we have an sort of like a way to use technology to, you know, disrupt that and ensure that there's that one-on-one conversation. I also think that just like what David said, I think there needs to also be some deliberate action from government to be able to, and not just government, I think even private sector, to be able to find those talents, you know, whether it's putting aside research grants or putting aside some innovation funding, or like just making some deliberate action to ensure that there are platforms that find these ideas in local form, whether it's in rural or urban areas, and support these ideas. That's, I mean, the reason why you don't know about them is because they might be on social media talking about this every day. They might have a solution to power, for example. But my need, you know, I mean, just knowing how challenging power is, they might need, for example, seed grants to start up their power business, to be able to move something from just the idea stage to prototype stage. You know, so most of the innovations that we see today had a lot of investment that went into them, so that they were able to scale to the point where they're now useful for people everywhere. So I think there needs to be deliberate action, not just lip service, but deliberate action, deliberate commitment in putting aside resources that will be able to support these ideas and even scout these ideas. You know how in football, you know, you have scouts go to local leagues, for example, to go find, you know, amazing talent. I think we need to scout innovative ideas like that to, you know, find them in that raw form and develop them for the good of the country.
Thank you very much, Eben. Speaking about that, I know that recently the Minister of Education launched a fund for young people to be able to tap into to scale up their ideas or ventures. And Dr. Tayo, who is the CEO of NESG, is chairing the Research Innovation Commercialization Committee to help these young people bridge that gap and bring the private sector with different financing model with some, you know, amazing people doing the work. But so young people should not despair. Speaking of despair, let me come to you, David. Climate despair is a very, very real issue, especially among young people. What would you say to a young person who feels their action does not make a difference?
Thank you, Dr. Progress. Actions making a difference, at times, it takes time. It takes time. You don't just start and all of a sudden you want to see that it's making a difference. But to every young person out there who is putting in the efforts one way or the other, I would say that let's keep the momentum up. Let's keep the momentum high. I know a lot of young people, a lot of young innovators, advocates in Nigeria that are doing quite well in the different fields. So from advocacy to startup to research, we are all doing different things for the same purpose. But if there is one advice that I would give, I say we should harmonize more. Let's all bring our ideas collectively, right, as one strong body, so that we can have a very thick and a strong voice which we can use to approach the government and push the government into taking more of the necessary and then the desired action. That is for the government. But for the youths, again, another thing I would say is let's keep building our capacity. You know, there was a time that the whole concept of climate change in Nigeria was planting of trees. So if your idea is still at the level of planting of trees, the world has moved beyond that. World has moved into other innovations, a lot of things now that are coming up in the field, in sustainability, food security, and the rest, all still related to the aspect of climate change. So we need to innovate as young people for our voices to be heard. Maybe what we are trying to advocate for, maybe the world has moved past it. Let's try to innovate and also try to bring the government up to speed with what is happening in the other parts of the world. So we can do this through startup, through research, through advocacy. But I know if we continue and we put our voice together collectively, finding a more unified platform where we can work together, just as we have the community of practice now on youth at the NESG, we'll be able to achieve more results.
Thank you very much, David. Let me come back to Asana. The subjects that we're discussing today speaks to impacts, and it's very, very important that we're forever, for you know, whichever platform we create for young people, that we measure success. I would love to ask you, Asana, how can we measure the success of this youth platform beyond just attendance and participation? What impact metrics would matter even as we speak on the subject of youth empowerment?
Firstly, I think what's important to say is when we're saying that part of national development, bringing youth in to collaborate and to innovate, bring in their ideas, this all needs to happen within a planned framework. So I'll ask the question, how many youth have actually read Nigeria's long-term development plan? So within that plan, Nigeria has a development plan, and within that plan, we have targets and we have timeframes. So I would say, to answer your question, the matrix to measure the success of all these youth engagement policies and strategies is to establish and measure how the youth have contributed to achieving these targets within Nigeria's development plan. So how many, how successful have we been in establishing startups that tackle climate change? How successful have we been in driving youth towards private sector to develop Nigeria's power sector? How many youths are joining political parties? who are the prominent youth voices that are speaking to policy change, who are actually involved in policy drafting. So I think it's about measuring impact within an agenda. So within the development agenda, in fact, how many youth even contributed to developing Nigeria's long-term development plan. So these are the, I think, kind of areas where we look within a plan and see how youth are contributing to achieving those targets and those within the set timeframes.
Thank you very much, Asana. Quite interesting that you mentioned the issue of politics. And I was going to ask Iben a question on politics. Iben, let me ask you two in one question. How can young people push for long-term inclusion in political party structures and not just during election cycles? Do you think Nigeria is ready for a youth-led political movement that is values-driven and pan-African in outlook? Why or why not?
Wow, that's a really powerful question. Starting from the second question, I think, yeah, Nigeria is 100% ready for a youth-led political movement. We saw traces of that during the 2023 election, where we saw like increase in youth registrations, whereas like during the PVC cycle, but also like increase in youth engagement and conversations that trail the election, right? So I think we building on that, definitely we can definitely see that, and also like the civic engagement that we've been saying, we can definitely see that yes, Nigeria actually is ready for a youth-led movement, and that movement doesn't necessarily mean that you need a young person to be a president. It's a movement that should be able to demand for solutions from whoever the candidates are to ensure that young people's ideas, young people's welfare, and the things that youth need basically are front and center when it comes to election agenda. Part of the issues that we had last election cycle was that many conversations around tribalism and some of the negative things that we see in our political discourse sort of like overshadowed some parts of the conversation. So I think that like moving forward, especially in around to 2027 elections, we need to see young people lead more conversations around the development issues, power, jobs, like the things that affect us directly, right? And ensure that those are the issues that dominate conversation, not necessarily the negative things that we've been seeing. To your first question, I think one of the ways that we can ensure more young people have more representation in political parties is part of what we're also seeing the women bloc do, right? So there's currently conversations with the National Assembly about having a quota system within parliament where certain seats will be set aside for women, right? I know that this is a very hot topic at the moment and there's so much conversation around this, but I think that we're not so far, if we're able to achieve that, we're not so far away from having something similar for youth. Currently, the only way young people are engaged at the political party level is that you have a youth rep at the various states executive or the national executive, like a youth party, political party wing leader, and that's it really. Like usually even during like the LECO committees or the various committees, you struggle to get young people onto those committees, right? Most people just say, oh, youth, go to the youth, something, something, something. Like, they sort of like put them like children church, basically. So I think that, yes, we need that quota system, right? Just as we're pushing for women, I think we need to also push for young people to have that kind of system where youths can be represented and can have those positions where, if we say 20% of positions of political parties must be youth, and that becomes law, I think it gives us a stronger chance to compete. Because if you want to compete in the current system where political party forms are in the tens of millions and hundreds of millions, and campaigns are what, hundreds and hundreds of millions, it becomes really tough because you really cannot expect a young person who's left school and done NYC and is maybe like the first few years of his job to compete with someone who, been in the political system for such a long time, right? So I think that quota system helps to make things a bit more equitable. And I think that equity is what we should basically fight for within that system.
Thank you very much, Iben. We've been talking about the National Development Plan. Let me ask David one question. I know we're running out of time. I'll ask David one last question and then do a rapid round question for each of you. David, do you think Nigeria is on track for its long-term development plan? And how do you see the youth contributing to these long-term plans?
Okay, thank you, Dr. Progress. Now, to answer your question, let me give some figures from the Nigeria Energy Transition Plan, where we are currently, and then where we hope to be. So in terms of our electrification rate, we have a target to reach 100% electrification by 2030. But currently, from all statistics, all figures available online, we have over about 90 million Nigerians that still do not have access to electricity. So it's a question of between now and 2030, can we make sure everybody have access to electricity? And we are thinking that by 2060, we should have over 60 gigawatts of electricity, mainly from renewable. And we are in 2025, we have less than 13 gigawatts. We are targeting 30 gigawatts by 2030, and we are at 2025, we have 13 gigawatts. Mm. If you look at these figures, I can go on to mention all. If we are to measure how we are on track, I would rather say we are still around 20% being on track. And for us to be able to achieve this, we need more young people on board. The energy transition plan, which I'm using for example, is targeted to create about 840,000 jobs. Currently, we have less than 200,000 jobs within the energy space in Nigeria. And we are targeting 500,000 jobs, that is green jobs, by 2030. 2030 is here already. So are we on track to this? Maybe we're on track, but we are very, very slow. So we need to bring more youth on board. Like I said earlier, we have the strength, we have the intelligence, we have what it takes to drive this long-term or medium-term development plans that we have in Nigeria. And the government really needs to look into more, recruiting more youth into the government space, into the government sectors, the government offices, not just giving loans or grants now for startup. Let us be part of the workforce in the government to drive this national development so that we can achieve the targets.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, David. So let's now do, I know we are out of time, but I'll ask you three rapid questions that I want each of you to weigh in on in less than 30 seconds each. Let's start with the first one, and I'll start with Asana. Let's imagine it's 2030. What would a sustainably empowered Nigerian youth ecosystem look like? And what must we do today to get there in 2030? Let me start with Asana. I'll come to Iben then, David.
Well, I always say, whatever you want to do well, you need to make sure your foundation is strong. We need to go right back to the beginning. We can't just be building on faulty foundations. So starting right from our education system, are we planning everything with a purpose in mind? And the purpose is to reach a strategic goal in 30 years' time. So the youth that are being born today need to be part of a plan to develop Nigeria and get to a specific point in 30 years' time. So starting right from education, we need to start designing our education system to build youth who are going to be the ones who are going to lead Nigeria into the future and be the great country that we know Nigeria is supposed to be.
Thank you very much, Asana. Iben?
Yeah, no, Hassana said it really, really well. I think that long-term planning and visioning and foresight needs to be something that we embed into everything that we do, right? Ensuring that we're able to see 20, 30 years ahead. And Hassana just mentioned the kids that are born, you know, last year and this year, they would start work in the year 2041, you know, after finishing the 16 years of education. So if they're to start work in that 2041, around the same time when AI should be taking up 50% of jobs, our education system doesn't prepare them to be able to compete with AI and be able to fit into that kind of work mode. You know, so I think those are the questions we should be asking ourselves now and building, you know, capacity and building sort of like plans for the future.
Thank you very much, Iben. David?
So in 2060 or in the future from now, I see a sustainable Nigeria to be a Nigeria where the minimum wage would be able to make someone to meet up with the basic needs and the necessities in life. And I see a sustainable Nigeria to be a Nigeria where development ideas are at the forefront and are being projected to the youth and the general public rather than political plans and political agendas. And I see a sustainable Nigeria where the gap between the poor and the rich is reduced, where everyone has access to the basic amenities.
One other question is, if you had the power to redesign Nigeria's youth engagement strategy this year, 2025, what are the top three pillars that it must rest on? Let me start with Iben. What are your top three pillars a youth engagement strategy in 2025 should rest on?
I think consistent, or let's say very as regular as possible, consultation. And this is not just at the federal level. I think the various state ministries of youth and education and all like youth-related ministries need to ensure that there is consistent consultation. I think we also need to ensure that there's a national youth policy. I think we can't talk about youth development without a national youth policy, and the COP Youth has been advocating for national youth policy for quite a while now. We know that there's a draft and there's work on this, but you know, the federal government needs to put their foot down to ensure that this actually happens really, really fast and the funding required is released. I also think that there needs to also be, like I mentioned earlier, a conversation around youth leadership quotas. What some people have started to do in the developed world is companies have youth advisory boards, for example, like private sector companies have youth advisory boards. Public ministries have youth advisory committees and stuff like that. So maybe beginning to think around how we can get those kind of systems and places where youth can have a space where they can come in and advise and, you know, engage with leadership as part of ways, as Hassana said earlier, passing the baton, you know, to the younger generation. So these are three, you know, ways I think.
Thank you very much, Ibn. Hassana, how about you? What are your three top pillars?
I agree with Eben. I think number one is a national youth policy. And again, this national youth policy should be tied to national development. So it's not just about looking at youth as a demographic that you need to cater for. It's about youth being your tools to achieve your national development plan. So I think that national youth policy is critical, and it needs to be aligned in such a way that it is looking to the national development plan and figuring how our youth development is going to achieve our national development. Number two, I would say, is working with youth on human capital development to move youth out of this current, well, not every youth, obviously, but majority of youth in Nigeria, moving them away from surviving mode to thriving mode. And I think there it's hard in the current economic situation of Nigeria to keep on, you know, going about how youth are the future, and you know, it's up to them to step up to the platform and take the reins when they're just concerned with surviving. We need to move from survival to thriving, and we need to do that through our human capital development. And lastly, we need to I think redesign our engagement strategy with youth away from, again, this beneficiary mindset into this collaborator, co-creator mindset. So you have to look at youth as being a key part of development, not a beneficiary of development.
Thank you very much, Hassana. David, your top three pillars.
Three pillars. One, I would say participation and representation, and it's in line with what Hassana said. So youth should be involved in decision-making process at all levels, not just at talking, but now as real stakeholders. Secondly, I would say this: the pillar of to be safe and be in an enabling environment. Yes, youth should be provided with safe spaces for youth to express themselves, to organize, and then to act. And the third pillar, I would say, would be inclusion and accessibility. We should ensure that all youths, regardless of gender, race, class, location, or background, we should all have equal opportunities to participate and to air our voice. Thank you.
Let me take one final question for all of you, and I want you to really, really keep this brief. In one sentence or less, what does empowered, which is the topic we're looking at today, empowered for impact, what does empowered for impact mean to you personally? Let me start with Hassana.
For me, it means that your voice is respected. It's not only heard, it is respected.
The voice is respected. Ibn, how about you?
It means my capacity is built, that I am able to function at a level that brings value to wherever I am. So my
David,
capacity is built.
Capacity built.
I am equipped and given the authority or the resources to act.
Amazing. I really love all your definition of empowered for impact. distinguished guests, you've been listening to the NESG Radio Podcast. And with me have been amazing panelists from the Youth Community of Practice. Thank you very much, Asana, Eben, and David, for contributing your thoughts to the conversation this day on Empowered for Impact, how young Nigerians are shaping a sustainable future. Till we come your way again next time, keep shaping the future and keep making impact. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.